This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Ira Flatow and Science Friday were blacked out of their studio in New York City today. They should be back next week. We'll talk about the big blackout later in the program, but there is other news, including what could be an important development in the war on terrorism. Shortly before the power cascade began yesterday afternoon, President Bush announced the capture of Ridwan Isamuddin, better known as Humbali. He's said to be a senior member of Al-Qaeda and a confidant of Osama bin Laden. He's wanted specifically for his links to several terror plots, including last year's nightclub bombings in Indonesia and September the 11th. Details of the arrest are still sketchy, but reportedly it happened somewhere in Southeast Asia in an operation that involved the Central Intelligence Agency and forces from an as-yet unidentified country. Word of this capture comes just a few days after federal agents arrested a British arms dealer in a sting operation in New Jersey. He allegedly planned to sell Russian anti-aircraft missiles to men he believed to be terrorists. If you have questions about what these events mean for the vulnerability of commercial aircraft, about anti-missile technologies, and about progress or lack of same in the war on terror, give us a phone call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now to talk about the arrest of Al-Qaeda suspect Humbali is Zachary Abuza. He's the author of the forthcoming book, Militant Islam in Southeast Asia, Crucible of Terrorism. He's also a professor of international relations at Simmons College in Boston. He joins us by phone from his home in Ipswich, Massachusetts. And welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Nice to be here, Neil.
You've interviewed Humbali.
No. I've interviewed other members of JI. I've never interviewed Humbali.
Excuse me. I misunderstood then. And JI is Jamaat Islamiyah, the organization in Southeast Asia associated with Al-Qaeda. What can you tell us, though, about this man and about the significance of his arrest?
All right. He's about a 37-year-old Indonesian. He grew up in a fairly poor family in Indonesia. He went to Malaysia to enter an Islamic school. He came from a very devout family. He failed to gain entrance there and then made his way to Pakistan in the mid-1980s when he got hooked into the Mujahideen and the jihad against the Soviet Union. And he was very active in that crusade, or, well, that's a poor term to use, but mm-hmm. in the Mujahideen struggle. Interestingly, he was not a fighter. He never picked up arms against the Soviets. He was an organization man. He arranged for a lot of Southeast Asians to come to Afghanistan and Pakistan to fight. He took care of them, their transportation, their passports, assigned them to units, got them housing. In many ways, he was doing exactly what Osama bin Laden was doing at that same period. He was recruited into Al-Qaeda when the organization was formed and held several very important leadership positions in that organization.
Again, organizational.
Yes. He was a member of Al-Qaeda's Propaganda Commission and later on its Military Affairs Commission. He also became one of the only non-Arabs to be a member of the Al-Qaeda Shura, the leadership body of the organization.
Shura is the council.
Yes. And he returned to Southeast Asia in the early 1990s. And when the decision was made to form a regional affiliate of Al-Qaeda, Jemaah Islamiyah, it was Humbali who put together this network.
So what terrorist attacks has he been linked to? I mean, we've heard allegations about September the 11th and of course, the Bali bomb last year.
Well, the first time his name really appears in intelligence documents actually goes back to 1995 in conjunction with Ramzi Youssef's plot to blow up 11 jetliners over the Pacific.
This was the Philippines-based plot.
The Philippines. And Humbali's name appeared in the board of directors of a front company that was used for that attack or planned attack. But more recently, after he established Jemaah Islamiyah in 1992, 1993, I think it's very interesting that this organization did not engage in any act of terrorism itself until 2000. So you have to ask the question, what was he doing in all those years? And he put together a very good regional network in that time. He never got engaged in terrorism that he was not ready for or his lieutenants were not ready for. He recruited, he trained, sent people to Afghanistan, sent them down to the southern Philippines to MILF camps for bomb-making training. And he also ran a lot of meetings and did a lot of back-office operations for al-Qaeda, set up front companies, established charities, accounts. But the meeting that was very important was in Kuala Lumpur in January 2000. And at that meeting were two of the September 11th hijackers, as well as several of the people that were responsible for the USS Cole attack. So he had was in on that September 11th from a very early start.
Our phone number again is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address, TOTN@npr.org. And let's go to Michael, who's on the line with us from Tallahassee, Florida.
Hello.
Hi.
How you doing?
Okay.
I was just wondering if the guest knew any history about him and if he was funded by the CIA or the American government at all.
This was back in the Afghanistan days in the fight against the Soviet Union in Afghanistan, you're talking about. Okay, Zakaria Bouza?
I have no knowledge that he was wanted back then or anyone was really paying any attention to him.
The question is, was he part of a group that was funded by
Was he funded? Well, he worked for one of the groups in the Mujahideen that did receive some funding, though a very small amount from the U.S. and Pakistan government.
Okay. Michael,
thank you.
Thanks for the question.
All right, thank you.
If he's such a central figure and tied in so internationally between al-Qaeda and Pakistan and Southeast Asia, I mean, his name is not that well known, at least to publicly.
Right. Well, that's the successful mark. He certainly doesn't want to gain much notoriety. This is someone that's really tried to stay in the shadows. It is interesting, though, he has been under indictment in Southeast Asia, first in Indonesia, going back to 2000. So long before September 11th or the Bali attacks, he has been on regional security services radar screen. They've been looking for him for a long time.
How has he eluded capture, then?
He constantly moves. I think it's fairly indicative of where he was captured in Thailand. In the past 18 months, there have been reported sightings of him in Malaysia, in Cambodia, in Thailand several times, in Burma. This man constantly moves and rarely stays in any one place for very long. He also has never been known to travel with much of an entourage, so it's easier to lie low and avoid suspicion.
Yesterday, President Bush said he was an associate of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, another senior al-Qaeda operative who was arrested some time ago. Are people like Humbali and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, are they replaceable?
Well, these are very sophisticated organizations, and if the arrest of one or two people brought down the organization, it wouldn't be a very successful or durable one. I think that both Humbali and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed are replaceable in the long run, though it certainly causes short-term, it is a short-term loss for them. Someone like Humbali, I personally, when I look at the roster of other JI leaders, there's no single person that could do all that Humbali has done. They're individuals who could fill in a certain role that he's done. But this is a man who's been engaged in international terrorism for a long time. He has great contacts both within al-Qaeda and JI. He has a lot of charisma, recruited a lot of the people himself. A great manager, had kept very close tabs on JI and al-Qaeda finances in Southeast Asia. So it's going to be hard to replace him, but JI is not going to collapse tomorrow.
If he's such a charismatic figure, is this one of those arrests which is likely to inspire people to attack in revenge?
I don't mean to be alarmist, but I wouldn't be surprised by that. I really wouldn't. If you go back, even before this, you had the bombing in Jakarta 2 weeks ago of the
Marriott Hotel.
And Indonesian police were very concerned that not all of the explosives were accounted for, and that already there was the threat of another, at least one more attack there. One thing that Hambali introduced to Southeast Asia is suicide terrorism. And there has never been suicide terrorism in Southeast Asia until the Bali attack, when you had one bomber, then with a Marriott. And Hambali has been very actively trying to recruit people for martyrdom missions in Southeast Asia. So I'm concerned that people who have already pledged that they will do this will follow through on this to avenge their boss.
Zachary Habuza, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Zachary Habuza is a professor of international relations at Simmons College in Boston. His forthcoming book, Militant Islam in Southeast Asia, Crucible of Terrorism, is due out later this month. He was with us by phone from his home in Ipswich, Massachusetts.